Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and the non-humanoid alien form I would choose is a soft, squishy marshmallow.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and the non-human alien form that I would choose, just because I feel like this a lot lately, is probably just a rock. I could just like stay in one place for a while. It's unassuming. No one's going to bother me.
Mm-hmm. My name is Fuddiness, and the non-human alien form I would choose would probably be like a cloud, and probably for the opposite reason. Like, Matt, yeah, I'm currently a rock. I'd like to be a cloud.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Sari Riley, and the non-humanoid alien form I would choose is like a slime thing, probably, just because it seems useful to like slip under doors. You can never lock me up.
Yeah, I didn't really think about utility. I just want to be soft. This week we are talking about Stepsister from Planet Weird, and hopefully Mari will make it make sense why we introduced ourselves that way when she tells you what happened in this movie.
Hopefully. In this movie, we meet Megan Larson, who is 16 years old and relatively unhappy with her life, I think. Like, I don't know. I guess you could say that. Her mom is a windsurfer and her father is some sort of like generic workaholic, and they end up getting divorced. Her little brother, Trevor, is annoying. She isn't part of the cool kids at school. And she has a one-sided crush on the most popular boy in school, Cutter. Things get even worse for her when her mother meets a new man, a strange dude named Cosmo Cola. Things get serious between mom and Cosmo pretty quickly, which we learn when they announce their engagement at a family dinner. The dinner hasn't gone so well, though, because Cosmo and his daughter Ariel are weird. She's scared of wind, for instance. She uses big words. And when she gets stressed out, she runs away to the bathroom and comes out completely drenched, including her clothing. At this point in the movie, we kind of like rewind and get introductions again, but this time from Ariel's point of view, and it turns out that her and her dad are aliens. They are from a planet where everyone is the non-humanoid form of a bubble. So there you go. That's the intro. But her dad was a freedom fighter on this planet, and they had to flee. Ariel's mother was killed in the escape. That's why they are on Earth. Ariel hates it here, and she just wants to get back home to be a bubble and float around with her boyfriend, Fanul, who is the evil emperor's son. Ariel ends up going to Megan's high school, and even though she's acting still very strange, she can't ride a bike, she wears all her weird clothing, everybody loves it. She gets invited to hang out with the cool kids immediately, and Cutter has a crush on her. Megan continues to dislike Ariel, especially as she gets more and more popular, until they decide to make a temporary alliance to help break their parents up. They realize they don't want this marriage to go through, so they decide to join forces. We watch their plans, including one where Megan invites her dad to dinner and Ariel invites their neighbor, a weird psychic lady, over to dinner too, in the hope of like hooking their parents up with other people. It doesn't work because the dad and the psychic are starting to like each other, and also it ends in an awesome food fight. But this stresses Ariel out and she runs to the bathroom. But when Megan goes and finds her, Ariel is in her bubble form. No one believes Megan about the alien thing. Ariel gets fed up with everything and decides to contact her boyfriend Fanul and tell him where they are so he can come rescue her. He shows up on Cosmo and mom's wedding day, but he sold her out and brought his emperor dad along too. Fanul is tasked with watching Ariel, Megan, and Cutter while the emperor goes after Cosmo. The teens team up, though, to convince Fanul that tyranny sucks and freedom is cool. Fanul is won over, and they take on the emperor with unplugged hair dryers and a leaf blower, and he's defeated with a giant pop. The wedding happens. Fanul finds he likes Megan better than Ariel, which is great because Ariel is coming around on Cutter. The end.
And before we dig into all of that, Matt, what is the cast of this movie up to now?
All right, so let's dive in, because these people are actually up to interesting things, unlike some of our past
guests.
Yay!
So excited.
Starting off with the man who plays Cutter, Tom Wright. He's, you know, he's the guy the main character is sort of into in this movie. Doesn't have much character beyond that. But we'll be seeing him again soonish for this podcast. And I just wanted to bring him up because he's like a producer, writer, director now. And if you look him up, he's like the most should be in Mumford and Sons looking man you've ever seen. Like, just the biggest beard and the longest hair and the straw hat and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, I mean, good for you, dude. But that's not what I expected to see from like the bro-y surfer dude in this movie. Next up, we have somebody that we've talked about before on this podcast. We have Lauren Maltby, who plays Heather Hartman, the popular girl at school. And we discussed her before because of her role in Xenon, playing kind of the same role. Just like the popular girl that our main character becomes friends with by the end. Kind of, sort of.
Yeah, less friendly in this one, I think.
Yes, definitely. There's like glimmers of hope of her maybe being a decent person, but it's not as well explored as it is in Xenon. And this also won't be the last time we talk about her on this podcast. She is currently, we talked about this before as well, she's retired from acting, having only been in a few movies, including one of my favorites, I'll Be Home for Christmas, as well as being a Disney Channel movie surfer, and is now a licensed psychologist with a specialty in trauma, attachment, and CBT. Miles Jeffrey plays Trevor Larson, the little brother in this, and he was one of those faces where I was like, I know this kid, he's got to be in a bunch of things in the 90s and 2000s. And he was in Face Off, the John Travolta Nicolas Cage movie, so that must be where I know him from. But you could have like bet me $1,000 and I would never would have listed Face Off as the thing I would have known him from. But apparently that's the only thing he's done that I know. This also won't be the last time we discuss him on this podcast. He hasn't continued acting much in the last 10 years, aside from a couple of projects. But according to his Instagram, it looks like he was or is still in grad school, because he was posting pictures of lots of giant stacks of books that he's been having to read. But the most interesting thing that I found is that he has a beer review Instagram called Brulissies.
What is he studying at school? You probably didn't dig that deep.
I tried. It seemed like sort of like, I don't know, whatever leads you to reading and naming your beer Instagram after Ulysses.
Right, yeah. That's really where I was going with that question, but okay.
Yeah. It seemed like he had like, a lot of the books he was reading were like the standard sort of canon books that you hear about people reading but don't actually go and read.
I know exactly what you're talking about, so yes.
Next up, we have Christine Hay. Don't know how to say it properly. I'm sorry. She plays the mom, Kathy Larson, in this movie, who, again, you know, when you look up the parents in these movies and you find out you're the same age as they were when they made the movie, Yeah. But she doesn't seem to be acting much anymore, but was on the 80s TV show Head of the Class, which I have heard of, but that's about all the information I know about Head of the Class. But the reason that she maybe doesn't act anymore is that apparently she was, possibly still is, this news article that I found was from 2001. She was the quarter owner of a Silicon Valley company worth $500 million.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I
want a quarter of $500 million.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right? I wouldn't be playing DCOM moms either if I was had a quarter of $500 million. Next up, we have Lance Guest, who plays the Cosmo Cola role in this, the alien stepdad. He is apparently similarly well-known for something he did in the 80s, a movie called The Last Starfighter, which I have also heard of but never seen. So I didn't recognize him at all. But I think to people who had seen that movie before this movie, they'd be like, it's the guy from that movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah, none of us had that reaction.
Yeah, no, I sure did not have that absolutely reaction.
Welcome to my world always, when you guys are like, oh, that guy from that thing. Yeah, that's me. Like, I do not have that reaction, ever.
He is still acting in things, small roles here and there, but most notably since this film, he played Johnny Cash in the original Broadway cast of Million Dollar Quartet, the musical about Johnny Cash, Elvis, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Carl Perkins. So he was in that for a while, and there's video of him performing as Johnny Cash on the David Letterman show from years back that's like I don't know, he does a really good job convincing Johnny Cash, which watching this movie, I would not have guessed. Cosmo Cola and Johnny Cash do just not seem like the same
That's
type
fair.
Of role.
That's fair.
I'm Googling Johnny Cash right now.
Oh my God.
Oh, Sari.
I'm sorry. I just like have to admit it to the podcast. You know all my other shames.
Okay, so I named four country singer names there. You've heard of Elvis, right?
Yes, I have heard of Elvis.
Have you heard of Jerry Lee Lewis?
No.
Okay, don't Google him.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No. And I'm assuming Carl Perkins is probably a hard no.
No. Like Johnny Cash, I had a vague... Like, I have maybe heard this name before, but have all no right. context for this man. But yeah, Carl Perkins sounds like a fast food chain.
That is fair. I think that's the appropriate level of like who like that's the appropriate level of like how much you should know about those people. It's like Jerry Lee Lewis and Carl Perkins. Johnny Cash makes sense that you've heard of him. And Elvis. Yeah. Who hasn't?
Yeah. They made jokes about Elvis in the cartoons that I watched. So that's like how
I my
know.
God.
Yeah. Lilo and Stitch exist. So. Yeah. My brain is kind of broken right now from, as a person who has like read Johnny Cash's autobiography and like listened to so many of his albums repeatedly. I'm just like, oh, somebody doesn't know who this man is. Interesting.
Yeah, you've hit upon the two things I know nearly nothing about. DCOMs and musicians.
Well, I will move on so we stop piling on Sari. At the end of the podcast, Sari will give out her Twitter name. So if you want to pile on her and talk to her about Johnny Cash, you can do that yourself.
You can tell me a specific song and artist to listen to, and I will go do it. Victoria Buongiorno, who used to work with us, did this several times where she would send me a specific Panic at the Disco song or a specific Ariana Grande song and be like, please listen to this. You need it in your life. So I'll do that for anyone.
Because the truth of the matter is, Sari has probably never heard it before. Whatever that song is that you think matters so much, if it's not from a musical, she doesn't fucking know it.
Yeah.
We'll just have Sari watch the movie Walk the Line with Joaquin Phoenix and Reese Witherspoon, and then you just know as much as you need to know about Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Bonus pod.
Yeah. The one that no one asked for.
Truly, nobody wanted us to do this.
Yeah. Remember that movie? No? Well, it happened, and we're going to talk about it. All right. So our two main characters in this movie we're getting to now. We have Tamara Hope, who plays Ariel Cola, the alien stepsister. She has continued acting as well as being a musician. She has been in a bunch of episodes of that show Murdoch Mysteries that came up before on this podcast. The show with the guy who played the hockey player in the movie Genius, who I had said was maybe like the Canadian Jordan Padalecki, and then people on Twitter said just no, that's not. But she was also recently in the Guillermo del Toro movie Crimson Peak.
Oh.
And her band, The Weather Station, has an NPR Tiny Desk concert that you can watch.
It was very good. Matt sent us the link. I enjoyed it. I had a pleasant experience.
Yes, it's a very like chill, just like sit back, relax. Like you can have it on the background while you're making coffee or something type of music. It's very good. And our main character is Megan Larson, played by Courtney Draper, somebody else that we've talked about before on this podcast because of her role in The 13th Year. She has gone on, as we mentioned before, to play Annabelle on Buffy, Darcy on Veronica Mars, as well as being the voice of Elizabeth in the video game Bioshock. And one last bonus, where they are now slash where they used to be type of thing. The writer of this movie, Chris Matheson, somehow, on top of writing this movie, also wrote the Bill and Ted movies and a Goofy movie.
Oh,
amazing.
So he wrote a Goofy movie, one of my favorite movies of all time, and then also this and Bill and Ted movies. And that's range.
Yes. So now it is time to discuss all of our feelings about Stepsister from Planet Weird. But before we do that, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie prior to being assigned it for this podcast?
Nope.
This movie taught me what the word vapid was, so yes.
I have a note about that, about the language in this movie. I also, yes, definitely remember watching this one as a kid.
And obviously, no.
So now's the part where we talk about whether or not we liked this movie, but I never go first. So I'm gonna start. I had a really fun time. This movie is ridiculous and over the top, and I will not be surprised if it turns out that it's polarizing and some of you guys hated it, but I had a blast. We were going to record this episode many weeks ago, and then we didn't, and I ended up rewatching it last night because I was like, you know, like, I want to have the refresher, but also because I had fun. It's over the top in a very, very self-aware way, not just in a like, oh, this is a kid's movie way, but in a like intentional, it's just silly. I don't know. And I also, to the point about the language, I appreciate the fact that Ariel is just like, they have her using words like vapid and antithesis. And like, I just, I don't know. I had a fun time. I liked this movie.
I did not hate it. Like, I wouldn't say it was one of my top. I think it's funny. There were a lot of things in this movie that are elements of DComs that we've seen before, which we'll talk about. But I think that this had like a tone that was kind of different because of that. Like, it was super over the top and silly, but in a way that was like more self-aware than I think we've seen any other DCOM be. Even the thing where like they're giant bubbles on another alien planet and the way that they talk about it and like all of the gas jokes and stuff. It's stuff that you're like, people, they did this on purpose. It's not weird and like silly accidentally, like they were trying to make something serious and it like went off on another direction. So yeah, it was just like a romp of a movie. And at the same time, it like took all of these things about like being popular in high school and like, oh no, stepsister and like a new family, and it exaggerated in a certain way. It was like, what if, you know, the stepsister is actually an alien, and what if everything she did was actually what made her popular. So I thought that was pretty neat. And I did, not my favorite, but also I did not have a bad time watching this.
The other thing about her weirdness, like making her popular, is that I felt like it was pretty heavily implied that what's actually going on there is she's pretty, so she can be a right. fucking weirdo, and it right. doesn't matter because she's pretty. And like, I don't know, in spite of everything about this movie being excessive and over the top, that is real. So I don't know.
I also kind of liked it. Like, as far as a Disney movie went, it's definitely in my top half of them, because I think I also just really appreciated how over the top it was. It was like, if we're going to make aliens, we're going to make them gas bubbles and drinking soda yes! and afraid yes! of wind, and give this man so much like weird physical comedy to do, like pulling out candy in the middle of the ocean. And they just really committed to it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I don't know. I'll save the rest for more specifics for our discussion, but it was fun. I didn't watch it again, but I have such strong memories of it despite not having watched it in like 3 weeks. So that in itself is an achievement.
So I have to come in and be the one who didn't like it.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah,
I don't know. It, again, it's one of those things where it kind of falls in that middle gray area of like, I definitely didn't hate it. It's not like a genius or a can of worms where I like actively dislike this movie. But it's like, when looking at the list of things we watched, it quickly kept falling below films where I'm just like, yeah, didn't like it as much as that. Nope, I'd rather watch that. Nope, I'd rather watch this. And I think what it is for me is that I also enjoy the elements where they're just like going for it, because yeah, I did not expect the like space bubble scenes at all going into this movie. But I think that was also part of my issue with it, is that I wish they had gone further with a lot of the stuff they did. I think a lot of it felt sort of surface level, like shallow, added on for the weirdness factor, and not as explored as I would have hoped. I don't know. Like, I felt like that side plot of him being like a freedom fighter on an alien planet and he's being pursued by the Emperor is just like, that's the most interesting thing about this movie, and it's like two sentences.
No, it is a like background B plot in the thing that really matters, which is this 13-year-old girl's world being disrupted.
Correct.
Like, because that's the whole thing, because it's a fucking DCOM. And so, like, it's this little girl with this very, you know, normal ass life, and like very normal problems. And that's really what we want to talk about here. Never mind the fact that, yes, there is this whole like alien absurdity. I don't know. I feel like the movie also knows that the freedom fighter alien is probably the most like actually interesting thing going on here. It's deliberately about like middle school problems instead. I was so charmed by this movie, you guys.
I mean, you have her, and it's like a really, it's a true serious thing that, you know, Megan is like upset because her parents are divorced and it has disrupted her life. And for the movie to then like be like, but here's Ariel, whose mom died because she was a bubble who got popped on an alien planet by an evil emperor. So things could be worse. Bye, kids. Like that. That's cool.
Part of it also that like rubbed me the wrong way was the part of like towards the beginning, like we get to know Megan really well, and like I do think the movie is like very aware of like this is Megan's movie, this is her problems are the more important ones. But I think then all of a sudden there's like a 20-minute chunk where we're just with Ariel the whole time, and not much is really happening during that chunk. We're just like suddenly cut to Ariel, watch what she's doing like in her weird like sky journal that she has and like that like suddenly I was like, wait a minute, is she the main character? What's happening? Because it felt like it was a different movie happening next to our other movie that we were watching. And I just like, I don't know, the pacing kind of made me not stay interested in the movie as a whole.
Okay, but it's about their two different perspectives, okay? So we start Megan, we get her diary entries, which like the diary framing I also really liked, like because the whole thing is it's like how the world feels to you at 13. And so it's like her talking through how she feels about all of these things, and then like rewind and we get all of that same shit from the perspective of her alien stepsister talking about how she feels about the world. And like, I don't know.
Matt, I totally get what you're saying. And I just am sitting here thinking about how this is how I felt in Miracle in Lane 2 when you guys were all like, the mechanic god, amazing. And I was like, no, this is awful. What are you guys talking about? So now it's your turn to be like, okay, this is weird. And we're all like, yay. We loved it.
And that's the thing is like, I enjoy that style of framing the movie that way, and I enjoy it having the two perspectives. I just felt like it didn't, like in my experience watching it, it didn't make them equal, and it made me feel like this was Megan's movie and like Ariel was the outsider to the main character and to us. And so when we suddenly were spending so much time with her, I had to like readjust my brain to be like, oh, okay, this is also her movie. But the beginning of the movie didn't make me feel like it was gonna be that. So it's like one of those things where I just feel like they could have gone a little further with it, or just, I don't know, it just didn't work for me in the way that I think like it was supposed to.
I think that makes sense, Matt. And I agree that I wish I knew more about the bubble planet, because it felt like the information that we got about it was very scattered. Like, they didn't flesh out a full alien world. They were like, okay, we've got a freedom fighter, we've got bubbles, they're afraid of wind, but it didn't really explain like how they move around in the first place. I don't know. I had a lot of questions that could have been answered in her bubble segments. But one thing that I did appreciate was the little lines of dialogue that like hinted at a broader world. The fact that she was a teenage girl being like, this body is grotesque was so hilarious to me. And maybe it didn't land for you in the same way, but that was just a great touch.
Especially because the whole thing is like, everybody thinks like she's so pretty. Like that's mm-hmm. the whole bit. And mm-hmm. she herself is like, ew, how nasty. Mm-hmm.
I also like, I did enjoy the dialogue and I enjoy the characters themselves. It really was just a plot plotting, like, structure pacing issue for me that just made me not, I guess, get invested in the story as much. Whereas, like, I did like all the characters and all, like, the lines you guys are talking about. Like, I liked all those, too. It just didn't pull me into the overall movie.
Mm-hmm. Along those same lines, I really, really appreciated that. I don't know, in my memory, I was kind of expecting something else of like Cosmo Cola and him being weird, but he was just like genuinely a nice guy and so good mm-hmm. to Trevor. And even when like you can tell that Megan's like really struggling with this all, he's trying to be really nice about it. And he comes over with his cola as a gift. Like, it's just, what a good guy. What a good.
I like also that they established really early on in the movie that part of how they're existing in this society, like on our world, is that they happened to bring a fuck ton of diamonds with them. Yes. And he's like, and Ariel's like, what is this? This is useless. And he's like, no, 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 they're a big deal here. I will say, as much as I generally enjoyed this movie and like I had the experience of, as Matt was complaining about it, being like, no, and moving it up my rankings, my one essential grievance with this movie, and it's not particularly strong, but among the many DCOM tropes that this hits, it does touch on people not believing the main character about something that we all know to be true. It was funny initially with the little brother, like the little brother knowing that he was an alien, but being cool with it. That I loved. I loved that thread. but the specifically what bothered me about Megan realizing that they were aliens and not being believed is like Cosmo, like the unaddressed element of like Cosmo knowing that his future wife thinks his daughter is lying, and like I everything about like that, the parental handling of Megan insisting that they were aliens, rubbed me the wrong way, but it wasn't a plot line that was dragged out. So like that's like, I don't know, it doesn't sit with me poorly the way that some of the other like shitty parenting is a like a recurring theme of things that make me go, no, fuck this movie. It didn't bother me because she wasn't consistently a shitty parent and they didn't drag it out that much. But I was not a huge fan of that particular element of the story.
As soon as they showed her like sitting in therapy or whatnot and like, you're obviously like doing this. And I as soon as you take it there about something that the audience knows to be true, it's always such a like gut punch of like, oh, no. And I get it, like within the context of the story, she's claiming that aliens are real. But yes, everything you're saying about how like, you know, Cosmo knew all along and we know as the audience, it was just kind of like an icky thing to watch for those few scenes or moments or whatever.
I also really liked the mom as a character. And I think part of what I liked about her as a character maybe is the fact that we are closer to her age or are her age than we are to the teens that we would have been when we were watching this for the first time. And that's, I think, like what she's doing in this film, like Nicole said, is not the shitty parent thing that some of their parents do. Like Johnny Tsunami's dad sucks.
Like,
but like in this movie, you can like, I don't know, you can relate to the mom more and see that like she's making decisions that make her happy, but it's not something that she's doing against her daughter's wishes, other than just her daughter doesn't necessarily want a stepsister or a stepdad that are weird.
Right.
And it's like you see this mom just making choices to like make her happy, and you can't really fault her for that. So it's harder to be like, I do like that it doesn't fall into the classic sort of like parent versus child, like, no, you're gonna do this because I said so kind of thing.
Speaking of parent-child relationships, this is something that bothered me a little bit. Obviously, the death of a mother is very intense, even if it's a bubble mother that we never really see besides one graphic thing. I said graphic, but I meant like animated thing, not like a graphic death scene in this movie. But the death scene of Fenuel's dad, like the evil emperor, was very anticlimactic.
Yes.
Because these children just murdered a man. like that is what they did.
Yeah.
And then the wedding just happens.
And they go dancing.
Yeah. And this, like,
no, but he was a bad man.
He was
Sari.
A bad man, and they murdered him with blow dryers and a leaf blower.
But he was like the dad of a boy just murdered his dad, even if he was an evil emperor dad.
He was evil dictator.
Yeah, it went very quickly from like, oh no, I'm like defending, I'm guarding these captives from my dad, to like, oh, I guess I'm going to hold this weapon of destruction and murder my dad and then have fun at this wedding with my girlfriend. So just like minor continuity. It's fine. You can't think too hard about the bubble people. But if you start thinking hard about the bubble people, then you're like, oh no, they murdered. They did a murder.
And I think that's why I wanted them to like go further with that plot line, was because I'm like, I need you to convince me that that was okay. Like, I need you to like lay out the actual terms of their political turmoil on this planet, because I need to know that I am on Cosmo's side. Like, what if he was the bad guy in that story?
No, I love a DCOM that accidentally it teaches this audience like pro-revolutionary sentiment. Dictator bad, freedom fighter good.
I think one thing I wanted to bring up too that was interesting was sort of that we see occasionally in these movies the like falling for the wrong guy or being into somebody. This for me was like a weird trope of not being into necessarily like the wrong guy, but like just the worst guy that she could possibly choose. Like, here's a wholly uninteresting boy who you don't even seem that into, but yet this is the one that you've picked in this movie to be really, really into. And I don't understand the dynamic.
She's really, really into him because he's hot. Like, this is okay. This is the other thing that I genuinely enjoyed about this movie in an earnest, like not just because it's silly kind of way. Like, the movie is very, very silly, but there is like, that is a, to the degree that there are major themes in this movie, that is one of them, is it's like people who are pretty, like the only reason she likes him, that's the whole thing, is the only reason she likes him is because he's hot. He's the hottest boy in school, and therefore I have a crush on him, even though every time he opens his mouth, I should be like, what the fuck? Yeah. but like, that doesn't matter to me because I'm 13 and he's cute. And like, that is the whole thing. And so I was charmed by that as well. And I feel like the movie handled that pretty directly. Like, the movie also knows that it doesn't make any sense for her to be into this guy. And I liked, too, the fact that they gave him at the end his, like, tiny little bit of a, I don't know, I wouldn't call it an arc, really, but, like, his coming around at the end of, like, I gotta learn more words. Look, give me whatever you got. I'm ready to defend this movie. I'm here.
You have really thought every aspect of this out. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed
it. I watched this one twice, okay? I came prepared.
It's like a cost sunk thing where you're like, I have given almost 4 hours of my life to this film. I am ready to defend that 4 hours of my life.
You found a new hill to die on in this movie.
I did.
I'm going to just bring up my petty gripe now, because here is Sari's Science Corner. Do-do-do-do-do. In one of Ariel's journal entries, she's like, I think it's necessary to my survival, something, something, something. The element known as CO2. And I rewound the movie just to make sure that she said that. Carbon dioxide isn't an element. That's all. And if you were a gas bubble, maybe you should know that. It's a whole molecule.
I can imagine. Like, I can picture it vividly. Sari being like, skirt, rewind that bit. I need to hear it again. Did she say element?
Yeah. And then, like, angrily typing in my notes app, I can't believe she said element. No.
And Sylvia just being like, what is happening?
This week's group discussion topic, in honor of the like grab bag of DCOM tropes that this movie manages to hit, we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about all of the many DCOM tropes that show up in this movie and some of our favorites and least favorites. This was Matt's discussion topic idea, so I'm going to let Matt start.
All right. Well, I think one of mine that I guess is I don't dislike this, but it continues to be one of my favorite things about these movies as we watch more and more is the random sports that they keep inserting. And I have to believe that it's part of like a Disney thing of like kids like sports. They like to be active. We want to encourage them to be active. So let's open them up to some new sports maybe they don't know about or haven't seen before or don't have access to. So I put together what I think is a comprehensive list of all of the sports we've seen so far in the DCOM movies that we've watched. We've got rollerblading from Brink. Mm-hmm. We've got swimming from the 13th year. We have windsurfing, thanks to Stepsister from Planet Weird, which truly was like what made me think of this list, because I was like, okay. I understand some of these other ones being like pretty common kid activities, but windsurfing, not so much. We had soapbox downhill racing in Miracle in Lane 2. We had bowling in Alley Cat Strike. We had surfing in both Rip Girls and Johnny Tsunami. And we had snowboarding also in Johnny Tsunami. We had football in Can of Worms. And we had hockey in Genius. And we had horseback riding in Horse Sense. So just, you know, like get your menu of like childhood sporting activities. And I think we've pretty much nailed most of them by now. And I'm sure eventually we'll have a lacrosse movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
It makes me wonder like what else is left at this point? Like there's going to be more sports movies. So what exactly are we going to be watching in the next, like, you know, this is movie 18 or whatever. Like, I don't know. It's kind of scary to think about.
Seems like they've been saving some of the big ones, like soccer. Haven't breached that yet.
Oh, yeah.
So they wanted to wait till they had the best idea possible before diving into that DCOM.
I just had the moment of thinking about some of the like DCOMs that involve bigger sports. Mm-hmm. And they're saving they're saving some ideas, and that's all that I will say. Specifically, there's a movie at the beginning of 2001. That's all that I want to say, that features a major sport. That was the first thing that I thought of. It's like the third 2001 movie. If anybody wants to like cross reference this, but I think the biggest thing though, and like kind of both talking about this sports question and also the larger question of like the major DCOM tropes, is that all of these movies are incredibly formulaic. And so there's like the sports DCOM. This is as a thing that Sari gradually realized in her guessing process that like there is a formula that is sports DCOM, and like literally all you have to do is sub out the sport and like you have a whole new movie plot because we gave them a different sport.
I was trying to think, like, you know, looking back at this list of what's coming up, and we're like heading out, maybe not too soon, but in the next like 6 or 7 movies of like what I watch. So I'm like genuinely like I don't know what sports are coming up. so this is gonna be great.
I have like almost the opposite thing. Like so I watched a bunch of them, the like 99 ones. There was a chunk where I had seen all of them, and then these like where right now are in the middle of the year 2000, and these movies I have only seen a handful of them. But once we get into the 2001. 2002, like that's my shit.
Meanwhile, I think all of the ones I have seen, aside from maybe 2 or 3, we've already watched. So most of these are all going to be new to me from here on out. And yeah, I think for me, another reason that this movie set off the alarm bells of like talk about random sports is because I'm prepared for it when it's like a sports DCOM to like have these different sports in there. Yeah. But in this, when it was just like, and she windsurfs, and it's I was like, okay, that's gotta come up again. No, not really part of the plot too much. Okay,
it is because like, she loves wind and the aliens don't love wind.
Right, but like those things are cyclical of like the only reason that like the aliens don't like wind is like that's used as a plot device is because the other girl does like wind. And
like which came first, the windsurfing or the alien bubbles? Like, you know, what idea did they have first in the writer's room? Like, we'll make her a windsurfer. Oh my god, the aliens are bubbles or the other way around.
I believe somebody got super stoned and came up with both ideas together. That was that they were like it was a collaborative.
Can we do a movie about windsurfing bubbles? No, that's crazy. Move on. Wait, maybe we can, but just split up those ideas.
Yeah, or in that one brainstorming session, like what's the nemesis of a windsurfer? Like who would not like a windsurfer? A bobble.
Yeah. One dude had like just taken up windsurfing and he was like, hey guys, I got an idea for our next movie.
He was out there one day and like, you know who would hate this? A bubble.
So another trope that this fell into is like an unlikely friendship of people being forced together. So like two families coming together, and because so many of these DCOMs are about groups of friends or families that maybe have an argument or maybe have, I don't know, The Color of Friendship was like that, but very good. But even like Smart House, in that was like a family that was missing a mom and then found out that they were all they needed plus a real estate mom. And people redefining what they mean as family. And I actually kind of like that because I think that's like a really good message to include in kids' movies, especially. I don't know. I didn't watch very many sitcoms growing up with like big sprawling families and lots of side characters and things like that. This is my imagination of what a sitcom is like Full House or something like that. Matt, you can comment and correct me because I know you've actually watched it, but I don't have anything particularly intelligent to say or deep, but it's just like, I like that. I like that if you were watching a series of these Disney Channel movies, you could come out of them and say, oh, my family is weird too. And sometimes a family is like an alien and a business dad and a psychic, and that's okay because that's how it is on TV.
I think that is really helpful actually, and like looking back at these now as an adult and going like, oh yes, these were made to help kids cope with rough times at home, and realizing that like, oh, if you're like, I think the reason that most the families in DCOM movies are like the parents aren't necessarily fighting, but maybe they're divorced or separating or some sort of conflict is because like a lot of kids are going to be around parents that are like that, or like they have their parents have been divorced in their life. And it's, I think, helpful to see other people experiencing those things because those are the things that you can't necessarily, or you don't feel comfortable talking about at school with your friends because you don't know how they're going to react. So seeing other characters deal with that and come through the other side of it okay and accepting of the new step-parent or step-siblings, it's like, oh, okay, well, I mean, at least my stepsister's not an alien. I guess I can deal with mine.
I think my thing that I'm always watching out for, that I don't have like feelings about one way or another, but how we're always like, oh, is it like a supernatural DCOM? Is it a sports DCOM? Is it this kind of DCOM? I'm always like, okay, is it a popular kid DCOM or is it the nerdy underdog outcast DCOM? Because we seem to do that, the nerdy underdog one, more. But there have been a couple, like Xenon is arguably like very popular on her ship. And then also the 13th year, they were all like the popular swimmer kids. And so that dynamic was really interesting to look at. I am always very curious how they treat that idea of like popularity and like the nerdy kids versus the not nerdy ones and that whole thing. They often do this like thing that we talked about when we were talking about the actress, but like the mean girl who, after all, she was just a little misunderstood. She can be better. So those kinds of tropes are always really fun for me to like watch and pick out.
Sari talking about like different kinds of family. I agree that I think that that's like a really beautiful one, and I love seeing that one play out. But while you were talking about that, it also reminded me of the way in which a lot of these essentially do the classic rom-com trope of hate to love, only like with friends as a friendship thing. That like, and I particularly like that though, like with kids, like the idea that like the reasons that you strongly dislike somebody, not that they're like invalid, but that like maybe you'll come around, that like that is a pretty normal thing to have happen. I like that being framed as a normal thing for kids to go through, of like learning to experience empathy for another person, and like when you do that, you realize that maybe they're not so bad and whatnot. So that is another one that I enjoyed seeing here, broadly enjoy seeing in the DCOMs that we watch.
I am curious, sort of like looking back on all of these tropes and like thinking about them going forward as an adult now, looking back and watching these, how do you look at these tropes as sort of tropey and cheesy at times, or do you see them as sort of like Disney found a good formula and they knew what they were doing and they did it well? Like, I guess just like your feelings on the fact that we can talk about so many of these tropes so many times and that they keep coming up, but yet we still enjoy these movies.
I do not find that tropes are generally inherently good or bad. Like they just are storytelling devices. Like it is just a thing that exists in media, and whether or not they are good or bad is in the execution. It's whether or not a storyteller uses them effectively or ineffectively. And I think that the way in which we talk about the tropes used in DCOMs is a little bit different than the way that I would talk about the way the tropes are used in, you know, movie media that is made for adults. I'm using a different standard, a different metric to judge these movies, I think. But like, broadly speaking, I like most of these movies. It's rare that I finish a DCOM and I'm like, that was a terrible experience and I wish I didn't have that. That's why I'm still doing this. Like, obviously, I don't hate this. So broadly speaking, yeah, sure, I think they're good. But I also don't necessarily think that, I don't know, I have a hard time finding many tropes. There are some exceptions, but most tropes, I am unlikely to find them inherently good or bad, that it's really just a matter of execution.
Yeah, there are definitely tropes that I like and don't like, which is, you know, a sort of different thing. But I also am like, I love tropes. I'm like fascinated by how we use tropes and how we talk about tropes. And that is true, not just in like watching DCOMs, but, you know, I talk about it all the time when I'm on my channel, when I'm talking about books, like that entire idea of like these bones of storytelling and how we use them is something that I just find genuinely interesting. And I'm somebody who often turns to tropes for certain experiences. Like, part of the reason that I read a lot of romance is because I know the tropes that are there and I find them very comforting. Like, I love the happily ever after. I love some of these things that, like, you know, friends to lovers or things that I know, like I know exactly what the story, like the bones of it are going to be. It can still surprise me in the execution and doing it well and turning some things on its head. But for the most part, here's what I'm signing up for. And I think that the other thing about tropes is that they teach us a lot, like especially in media consumption and on like a like simpler level, probably for children to learn some of these things like we talked about. Like, yeah, your family might be weird, but there are other weird families out there. That's like a lesson of a trope that can teach you. So I personally fall more on the side of Disney found this formula and they do it well. And also they are using some of these things to inject some of those lessons, you know, along the way. So I'm cool with it.
So not having seen any of these as a kid, it's been interesting to see what tropes bubble to the surface, because also the media that I watched as a kid, like watching a bunch of cartoons like The Fairly Odd Parents or Pokemon or I don't know, whatever was on Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network pretty much, had similar themes. But as a kid, I wouldn't be able to articulate that. It's only watching these movies as an adult that I can tell that they're formulaic. But if I watched them as a kid, I think I would be surprised and delighted and watch them over and over again. And what's interesting is that Disney knows kids' media. It seems like they have hit upon the things that kids maybe would find goofy or weird and sometimes push the envelope on that with like Can of Worms or You Lucky Dog, where it's the point of it's like, oh, that's a little freaky, I don't like that, weird, but there's probably some kid who finds that hilarious. So who knows? There's this bucket that kids' media falls into that you have to, sort of like Nicole and Mari were saying, where tropes are existent throughout storytelling. It seems like in memorable kids media. Like, you guys remember these movies, and there are movies and stuff that I've watched as a kid that I probably have forgotten completely. But I'm sure a lot of the media that I watched, whether it was a cartoon like Courage the Cowardly Dog or a movie like Spy Kids 3D, that hit upon these same elements of family and sometimes supernatural, sometimes not. And sometimes those moments really hit home as a tender learning moment. And sometimes I just like laughed at bubbles. But part of what makes these tropes so persistent is the fact that they're things that kids need to learn at some point. And through these media, through these movies, I don't know, this is one way to learn it. And I feel like if I was a kid who was exclusively raised on DCOMs, like if I watch no other media besides this, I turn out pretty okay. I don't know. That's what I think about. I'm like, how did the media I watched as a kid, because I watched tons of it and played tons of video games, change the adult that I am and like the lessons that I passively absorbed? And so I think if someone watched Disney Channel movies exclusively, they'd be fine. A human that I'd want to talk to.
And they'd probably do like 2, 3, 4 sports, you know, just.
Yeah.
And now it is time to talk about the lessons that we learned from Stepsister from Planet Weird. I'm fascinated to hear what lessons you guys are going to come up with for this movie. Matt, what did you learn?
I realized my lesson was something that we didn't talk about at all in this, really. But the lesson I wrote down is that nobody lives in the Yukon.
Yes!
Okay, that gag was great. Every time they cut there, it was like, still population low.
Yeah.
My lesson that I learned was that just like sometimes it's okay to punch a Nazi, sometimes it's okay to pop a emperor who's a tyrant.
Okay, that was basically my lesson too, was it's okay to murder your dad if he's a dictator.
And my lesson that I learned is that we all inhabit bags of skin, and that's just how it is.
And now, to close out this episode, it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching Ready to Run.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, if I'm going by my grave mistake with Alley Cat Strike, and I know this is going to lead me astray, it's going to be about track and field, because we haven't really had one of those movies yet. So it's about a boy named Timothy. And he has always been the slow kid at school. He's clumsy. He's like the Bella Swan of this universe. Like, just constantly, falling over himself. But a young teenager. And he has a crush on this girl who's on the track team and who's so fast and so elegant and leaping over things. I don't know. That's like track and field. I don't really know how running works because I didn't participate in sports. And so it's about him and his imaginary friend, who's a running coach? No, too far. That's it's about Timothy, and he finds out that his like great uncle, who no one in the family really talks to, when he's not excited to stay with his great uncle for the summer, but then realizes that his great uncle was a track coach, but his uncle lives in like the middle of the woods or something. So he has to do a bunch of trail running and like leaping over logs instead and getting into antics that way. And he's like, oh, I hate this. And his uncle's like, oh, I hate having a kid here. And then he finds out that he loves running for running. Not for the girl, but then they get together anyway because it's a DCOM movie. What's the tagline? I feel so not confident in this.
Unfortunately, there is no tagline. However, I feel that because there is no tagline, I'm comfortable showing you the poster for this one. We briefly convened in the chat and we agreed that we're going to show you the poster. So I apologize to our listeners at home who cannot hear.
Oh man, it's a horse. Rat. And that's not a boy named Timothy. They're wearing pink. Oh, man, it's about horse racing or something, and how a horse. So this girl named, what's a girl's equivalent of Timothy? Tina?
Tamothy.
Yeah, a girl whose name is Tamothy, but who goes by Tammy for short, because who let her parents name her that? Is like, loves horses, but her favorite horse dies, and then she has, and then it's very sad, and then she has to learn to love this new horse who was untrainable up until this point, but ready to run. And then she like jumps over stuff with the horse. I know so little about horse. I know even less about horse running things than human running things. I think they trot and they jump. And then she like finds out that a wild horse is tameable after all. And wow, they're friends.
Amazing. Beautiful.
Delivered with such enthusiasm as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So dejected after you saw the poster.
Yeah.
Ah, damn it. It's a horse.
Yeah.
I don't blame you for going sport since we spend so much time in this podcast talking about sport, but it's horse.
It's horse.
Find out next time whether or not that is at all the plot of this horse movie. If you are enjoying this podcast, tell your friends, write and review it, all that good stuff. We would love to hear all of your thoughts on this episode and Stepsister from Planet Weird. There will be a post dedicated to this episode at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at decomsquad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Maddie Ness.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.